Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Second Canto, Chapter 7, Texts 32 and 33. The title of the chapter is Scheduled Incarnations. It corresponds in a number of ways to Chapter 3 of Canto 1, which you're familiar with, a listing of the different incarnations of the Lord. The speaker is Lord Brahma. He's speaking to Narada. The previous chapter was questions and answers, Narada asking Brahma about creation. Who's the creator? Who's the source? Who's the supreme? Is that you? Or is it someone else? And he describes the process of creation, Purusha Sukta. Prayers of the Rig Veda are being commented upon by Srimad Bhagavatam, or within Srimad Bhagavatam. And after completing three times over describing the process of creation, he then describes the forms of the Lord as they appear within that creation. And he describes the unknowableness of the Supreme Lord, that it's not possible to know the Supreme Lord in fullness by the tiny living entity except through the disclosure of the Supreme Lord through the medium of devotional service. And as Brahma says at the end of the previous chapter, he's saying again in this section of this chapter that although the Lord appears as if some part of or feature of this material creation, he's not. One should not be mistaken thinking like that, because material conception is thinking like that. Either there isn't, or it's stories, or something. And one should not think like that. Rather, that Krishna, or the forms of the Lord as they appear within this world, exhibit transcendental potency. And that's the way to understand the Lord's pastimes. In so many different ways that's being emphasized in the chapter, and very strongly is being emphasized here in this section is describing the pastimes of Krishna. The previous section is different starting chronological, but then not necessarily following in chronological order forms of the Lord. Then when he comes to Krishna, Shukadeva Goswami wants to speak a lot about Krishna, and so many verses. But the theme, once again, is his supremacy from the very first pastimes that he performed and throughout. It's a superhuman, supreme power, potency. He didn't undergo meditation to become God. There's no becoming. He exhibited his godhood or supremacy from the very beginning. And in doing so, he was very careful to preserve the mood of love of the residents of Braja, because they weren't seeing him as the supreme. They were seeing him as their beloved son, or the dearmost friend, or confidential beloved lover. So he maintained those loving relationships while exhibiting his supremacy. starting with Putana, Shakatasura, and Kaliyadamana, and Forest Fire, and you've gone through a number of pastimes up to this, Damodar Lila. Just as a baby, as a small child, as a very, very young boy, supremacy, and reciprocating with the love of his devotees. The two comments that are Acharya's comment. One is Sridhar Swami commenting on this section of the seventh chapter. Sridhar Swami writes that Krishna performs karma divyam, or superhuman acts, to inspire our faith. Of course, faithless persons, when they hear of superhuman acts, they go mythology. Not this is fiction. Or it's a story told by somebody to help us learn some lesson of life, and it's not, we don't have to take it as literal. But from the devotional perspective, Krishna is inspiring faith in his supremacy and in his love for his devotees. Meaning, like the forest fire. The description from the previous chapter is Mahavishnu exhales and all the universes come into being, and then he inhales and all the universes are withdrawn within his body again. That's superhuman. And Krishna enters within that cosmic manifestation, and he, by his desire, manifests fire element, and then he withdraws by his breathing the fire element. So he's exhibiting his supremacy, and he's doing in the form of Leela, where his devotees are. It's not like Mahavishnu off in some place where we don't even know. But he then descends in his original form and performs a similar type or you know, the principle of manifesting, unmanifesting the elements. There's many details. One of them is in this second canto. The description is that the Lord made the forest fire disappear by closing his eyes. Now, in the tenth canto it describes he inhaled. So there's variety in his lila. Sometimes when he appears, and there's two forest fires. There's one that comes after the evening of the Kaliyadamana Leela, and then there's some time passes and the Pralambasura is killed, and then there's another forest fire. We find this in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And similar, there's themes with variety on the theme. It's like music, you know, a composition. There's a series of notes that perform, that make a refrain, and then different instruments, big bass instruments, and the high violin instruments, and the oboe, and the, you know, different instruments will play that same melody, and then they'll play them together, but it's this, you know, there's a melody that makes the theme of a composition. So mentioned is Brahma's Krishna's, although he's a small child, he rescued his father. And normally it's the other way around. Fathers rescued their small child from some danger. But Krishna showed his supremacy. He rescued his father from some danger. Twice he did it. But he did, you know, the Varuna messenger kidnapping Nanda, another is a big serpent swallowing Nanda, Krishna rescues his father. And another is Krishna rescued the cows, and the cowherd boys when they're put in caves. So there's similar lila where Brahma does that, and then later Vyomasura does that. Vyomasura was the son of Maya, one of the last demons that was sent by Kamsa, and Vyoma did the same thing. Vyoma took the calves and the cowherd boys and put them in caves. Krishna killed Vyoma and released the calves and the cowherd boys, and they came out. Oh, Krishna, you're so kind. We're hungry. Let's go have lunch. So there's a theme of the lila, and there's variety on the theme of the lila. And devotees appreciate, just see how wonderful is Krishna. And so that's what Sridhar Swami is commenting. The karma divyam, so the Bhagavad Gita verse, janma karma chime divyam, his transcendental pastimes are exhibited to inspire happiness and enliven the devotees. Oh, Krishna is amazing. The coward boys at the end of the day, our acharyas would describe, they'd go back and meet their parents, and they'd say, let me tell you what Krishna did today. Krishna did da 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 da. So they would inspire the hearts of their parents, as they were just like little boys, having fun with Krishna. And so the parents developed or had affection for Krishna even more than the affection they had for their own children, which is not ordinary. It's transcendental. Thus Krishna incarnates along with Balaram to demonstrate his wonderful pastimes. No one can estimate his greatness. His body is transcendental, and he comes not exactly to diminish the earth's burden, but to exhibit his transcendental activities. And that's described further by Jiva Goswami, that the Lord can take care of problems without personally coming and taking care of problems. He can do so through other agencies or just by his willing. Here's the problem, there goes the problem. What's next? Because everything moves by his willing things to move. So he doesn't have to come to fix a problem. But he does to exhibit transcendental pastimes. It's important to consider. So the way in which Krishna deals with his devotees and the non-devotees exhibits his love for those individuals. He doesn't have to come. He does out of the love for those living entities. These activities create subjects for his pure devotees to discuss. Katayantas chamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. So, similarly, Jiva Goswami comments in his Bhakti Sandarbha, you know the Sandarbhas, it's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam according to topic, not, you know, sections, not, you know, sequential sections of the Bhagavatam. So, he comments on this seventh chapter, these verses in relation to Krishna's pastimes, in the following way. So, Brahma says to Narada, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the super soul of everyone, who is superior to everyone, including the all-pervading super soul, and who cannot be perfectly understood by me or anyone else, will appear in this material world and perform many transcendental activities to lessen the earth's burden. Unquote. So then he gives the Purva Paksha. Someone may doubt. If Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, superior even to the Purusha incarnations, which were discussed in the previous chapter, why does he descend to the material world to perform such an insignificant act as removing the earth's burden? Because that was the appeal of Bhumi, and then to Brahma, and then to Lord Vishnu. Please come and descend the burden. Please descend and remove the burden of the earth. To this, Sri Jiva replies that Krishna did not descend for such an insignificant act. He could have removed the earth's burden through his incarnations, or simply by his desire lessening the earth's burden did not require the Lord's personal appearance. Rather, Sri Krishna appears to manifest his pastimes, which are filled with transcendental sweetness. He comes to delight the devotees, for the Lord's lotus feet are dearer to them than life itself. He comes to shower transcendental sweetness upon the world. So this is what we should understand when we're hearing Krishna's pastimes, is what he wants to do. He wants to churn the transcendental emotions of his devotees, like ourselves. He wants to give us subject matter to hear and chant that does two things: purifies and helps us become attached to him. I was lecturing on this chapter while in India, and in one of the places where students like yourself were the audience. After a few lectures, a few days, someone commented, "You know, this is very different. I'm used to processing, hearing about devotional service, how to engage in devotional service, and you know, with that filter, with that attentiveness, what, how, and then apply. And then the listening process here is very different." And I didn't announce it, he was just commenting. And then asked, "Could you describe that?" So I'm describing the process is becoming cleansed just by hearing, and becoming inspired so that we become attached to Krishna, which is the goal. If one, and that's stated right in the verses themselves, the residents of Braja, being cowherdsmen, they would work all day long in their activity of cowherding. At the end of the day, they were very tired, so they slept very soundly. And the commentary says they didn't have time for meditation, so many other activities. But because they did what they did with absorption in love for Krishna, when they achieved the topmost perfection of attaining the highest planet in the spiritual realm, they didn't do this and that. They just had love for Krishna, and they were absorbed in thought of Krishna. And therefore we find in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this devotional service chapter, Krishna is indicating that's the topmost platform. This mind absorbed in Krishna and intelligence engaged in him always, one will live in Krishna, without a doubt. So this is the devotional process, and specifically this is the benefit to be derived from hearing Krishna's pastimes. That's what this chapter is, specific incarnation or scheduled incarnations. We still try to understand, but as Brahma said several times before the chapter began, our understanding capacity is very tiny. Because we're very tiny, and Krishna is the unlimited. So how much can the tiny, very limited, understand the unlimited? first of all, not at all, but to whatever degree we can, not at all by figuring out Krishna, but by Krishna's disclosure proportionate to our submission and surrender and service, then we can understand. And that's the goal of all the devotional practices. How to render devotional service is to understand and develop our affection and attachment for Krishna. That's a nice chapter. Nice section within the chapter. So, text 32. When the cowherd men of Vrindavan, under instruction of Krishna, stopped offering sacrifice to the heavenly king Indra, the whole tract of land known as Braja was threatened with being washed away by constant heavy rains for 7 days. Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy upon the inhabitants of Braja, held up the hill known as Govardhan with one hand only, although he was only 7 years old. He did this to protect the animals from the onslaught of water. So, we know the pastime. The specific phrase used in the 10th canto is Krishna picked up Govardhan Hill like a frog's umbrella. What's a frog's umbrella? We hold an umbrella if it's raining to keep the rain from cascading on our head. What does a frog use? Mushroom. That's the frog's umbrella. So if you're picking up a mushroom, Krishna picked up Govardhan like picking up a mushroom. Effortlessly is the idea. But it's a good metaphor because it served like an umbrella. But it's a little heavier than a mushroom. But he did it effortlessly. And he was just 7 years old. And he just did it with one hand. In fact, he held it up with the little finger of his left hand, not even his right hand. Little finger. What's that? You know, it's Leela. He's demonstrating. It's effortless. There's no effort at all. Even just hold your hand up in the air for 7 days and nights, nonstop. Just hold your hand. Nothing in your hand. So he's exhibiting his supremacy, which Sridhar Swami is saying it's to encourage our faith in, you know, it's not ordinarily possible even to do that, but to speak of a mountain. So how is it possible? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the main point that Prabhupada wants to make in the purport is the Leela is showing the fact that it's not necessary to worship demigods. In the followers of the Vedic scripture, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, largely that's what they like to do. They want to worship demigods because they then, from those demigods, get some benediction, something that they want. So, why does Krishna include that? People ask that question. If the real thing is this, why does he put that? Why does he even put it there? Because won't a lot of people go for that instead of this? So, Prabhupada explains, sacrifices, specifically the word is in the word for word is makka. Makka is a very specific word. It refers to sacrifices of Karmakanda section of the Vedas. So, such sacrifices recommended in the Vedic literature for the satisfaction of demigods are a sort of inducement to the sacrificers to realize the existence of higher authorities. So it's like piggybacking, I want something. Okay, you got a motivation. Here's the somebody who can help you get the something. Okay, somebody. So they recognize the authority rather than just unregulated fruitive workers. They're regulated and they're accepting a higher authority, and in that acceptance of the higher authority, acceptance of the Vedas as the source of information about that higher authority, and the Vedas are coming from Krishna or Narayan, and so it's indirectly recognition of Narayan. Now, you're a very attentive audience, but supposing there was one of you that was falling asleep. So I could get up and walk over and very gently shake your shoulder and say, I go. We're having class now. Or I could put a glove on the end of a stick and very gently tap your shoulder and say. So one is directly and the other is indirectly. But the stick won't move without the person moving the stick. So Krishna, Narayan, is the source of the Vedas, and through the extension of the Vedas one can come to know about Narayan. But even if those Vedas are saying something that's not directly about Narayan, it's still coming from Narayan. Worship the various agents that are controlling the universal affairs through makaha, through sacrifices unto them. It's recognizing the authority of the Vedas, the stick, and it's recognizing the source indirectly, recognizing the source of the Vedas. One is connecting with Narayan by worshipping the Devas. In fact, the process of yajna, the makaha sacrifices, indicate at the very beginning who is the beneficiary. The very first mantra is invoking the personality of Godhead, like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then Ganesh and David, this one, that one, and the persons and the priest and the so on and so on and so on. But the first mantra is the beneficiary. And Vishnu is the beneficiary. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. From Bhagavad Gita, 529. So it's indirect for a purpose. The unregulated, to get them a little regulated. The unregulated, those who are rebellious, to get them to accept the authority of someone, something greater than them, to fulfill their desires, because filling the desires is their main program. So if I can fulfill my desires better this way than unregulated, okay, I'll go this way. That's the reason behind it. However, according to Bhagavad Gita, when a demigod is worshipped, the process is accepted as the indirect method for worshipping the Supreme Lord. So, avidhi purvakam. It's done without proper understanding. But when the Supreme Lord is worshipped directly, there's no need of worshipping the demigods or offering them sacrifices, as recommended in particular circumstances. So, people that have grown up worshipping demigods have, you know, they feel uncomfortable about, when they start worshipping Krishna, to no longer worship the demigods. They feel like, you know, maybe I'm offending this deva or that devi. I don't want to offend this deva or that devi. They've been very kind to me, or I'm attached, or I'm afraid, or something like that. And that's where this avidhi purvakam comes. If by worshipping Krishna, automatically that other worship is included. Anyway, that's what the Leela indicates. Just worship Govardhan Hill. So not only some people don't understand, even sometimes Indra doesn't understand. And that's just because Indra has a contamination. If one who is a worshipper of Hanuman decided to worship Brahm, what's Hanuman going to say? Hey, how come you're worshipping Ram instead of me? That's not Hanuman. Ram, Jai Shri Ram. Yes, he's happy. Yeah, worship Ram. So, that's how it works. If one worships the personality of Godhead, by putting water on the root of the tree, you find the root of all existence and place your worship there. And all the leaves and branches and twigs and limbs of the tree are nourished. Automatically, it's taken care of. If you factually have found the root of all existence, then worship of any type is already taken care of. See it the other way around. To try to do the worship of the different limbs and different parts of existence, it's with a poor fund of knowledge. Just go to the root. Anyway, Krishna, through his Leela, was teaching the indirect is not required. And another, through the Leela, was to curb the pride of Indra, because Krishna doesn't like pride in the heart of his devotee. So if you have any pride in your heart, please remove it, because otherwise Krishna might help you to remove it in a way that you'll feel uncomfortable. So better remove it. Of course, we require Krishna's help in any case, but it's much nicer when it's done voluntarily and lovingly rather than the Indra program. And another is that Krishna, through this Leela, he wanted to satisfy the desire of his devotees. They wanted to uninterruptedly be in his company, because during different parts of the day, Krishna would be with the cowherd boys and the calves. And then in the afternoon, Krishna would go to Radha Kund and Shyama Kund, and Balaram would get the hint and signal, okay, cowherd boys, let's go this way, Krishna's going that way. And we don't find that when Krishna was performing pastimes with the gopis, they're, you know, Balaram and the cowherd boys are hanging out. You know, they were off with the cows. And so Krishna was with the gopis. And then they would come home, and the cows would have to go to the cowshed, and they were just mooing. They were intensely attached to Krishna. But it was time for Vatsalya Ras. Krishna went and took his meal in the house of Nanda and Yasoda. Because all day long they were in separation from Krishna, who's gone off to the pasturing ground. There's such a beautiful description by Sanatana Goswami in Brihat Bhagavatamrita about this. Have you read that? It's time for Krishna to go. And It's done so beautifully. Mother Jasoda presses her finger to her lip, and then she runs for Krishna and has him stand there while she adjusts his dhoti and his kurta. And she stands back and smiles. And Krishna says, "Now I must go, Mata," and he starts to take a few steps. And she runs again, and she gives him some extra sweetmeats and some other things to put in his. And she smiles, and Krishna smiles. "Okay, Mata, it's time to go." And this happens again and again. She can't bear the separation of Krishna. Finally, he disappears, and she's standing like a statue as Krishna's disappearing into the forest with the cowherd boys, and she can only see the dust of the raised by the hooves of the cows. And she just stands there with tears coming down her cheeks, just feeling separation from Krishna and all the residents of Braj. In fact, when Gopal Kumar comes, he doesn't know where he is. He's transported to some place, he doesn't know where he is, and he's asking people, "Where am I? What is this place? And who is in charge around here?" And no one will talk to him. He's thinking, what's going on? Because they're feeling separation. Their separation is so intense they can't speak. Finally he finds one old man, or old lady. He said, "This is Goloka. And the person that's in charge, very soon he's going to appear in that direction." She raises her arm and points. There's a path coming out of the forest. And just as she's doing that, Gopal Kumar sees residents of Braja running in jubilation, because before they were silent and morose and wouldn't talk. Running jubilantly in the direction. They can hear the sound of the buffalo horns, the bugles, and he hears the sound of Krishna's flute. And Gopal Kumar starts running because they've been in separation from Krishna. And it's such a scene. Krishna sees Gopal Kumar, and Krishna begins running. And Krishna embraces Gopal Kumar. "Where have you been? You've been away for so long. I've just been waiting for you to come." And he swoons and he faints in ecstasy. And all the cowherd boys become angry at Gopal Kumar. "Look what you did to Krishna." But Balaram understands. No. And he revives Krishna. And Krishna then looks at Gopal Kumar and smiles again and embraces him again. "At last you've come back." So beautiful. So, because the residents of Braja want to have uninterrupted exchange with Krishna, he arranges this pastime where they can be with him uninterruptedly, 24/7, as they say, for 7 days. And they didn't eat anything, they didn't sleep. Their bodily functions just stopped because they were so absorbed in 24/7 with Krishna, according to their rasa. The cowherd boys were wanting to massage Krishna's arm. "Your arm must be getting tired. Can you massage your arm? Maybe at least you can change to the other arm, because your left arm must be getting tired." Nanda Maharaj was sitting there with his cane. Said, "Krishna thinks he's holding up the overdone hill." But factually, the cowherd men were holding up the hill. And the gopis were just delighted to have uninterrupted eye contact with Krishna. And Krishna would glance out of the corner of his eye. This exchange was going on of love. We know from Nectar of Devotion, Krishna was seeing the beautiful forms of the gopis, And Balaram began to smile, and Krishna began to blush. Balaram knows what my thoughts are. And his arm began to tremble as he was blushing. And everyone was, Nanda Maharaj with his cane ready. Get your canes ready. The just engaging in pastimes that increase the attachment and affection of the devotees of Raja. In the midst of, you know, the calamity of the deluge of Sambartika cloud, but to curb the pride of Indra and to teach this lesson that no need to worship the demigods, just worship Govardhan, and to inspire the faith of the residents of Braja. He then manifested this giant form of Hari to accept all their offerings. So it wasn't just child's play. Govardhan is our Lord and Master. Such a wonderful pastime. Such a delightful pastime. So when we honor this delightful pastime, all over the world, the devotees are enjoying so much. The next one is Shakatasura, and I think we'll cover that one tomorrow along with some other items. This section is about to end. So, any comments? Questions?
Maharaj, we have heard that some very elevated yogis, they have the power to put the planets in different orbits and things like that. So how do we distinguish the feats of a very advanced yogi from that of Lord Krishna?
Because Krishna is the source of that power which the yogis have, and like, you know, Brahma, he tested Krishna's, the limit of Krishna's yogic power, and Krishna showed him. And another is, that's been mentioned already, Krishna didn't undergo yoga practice to do his feats, to become God, you know, to become mystical, or possessed of mystic potency. He exhibited them immediately. When he killed the Putana demon, she assumed a body that was 6 miles long. So, in the commentary by our acharyas, it says Krishna could also have, you know, to manage this giant body, he could have assumed a giant body, but he didn't, because he didn't want to disturb the affection of the residents of Braja for him as a small boy. So they came and took him off the breast of Putana and chanted Vedic mantras and took the tail, little hairs in the end of the cow, and moving the hairs of the end of the cow over the body of Krishna to dismiss the evil omens that may have affected him. And Abhishek, and bring the Brahmanas to chant the mantras. And he's smiling. So his powers were not derived from some other source, and the yogis, their powers are derived from Krishna. And if there's a contest between them, just like Durvasa Muni and Lord Vishnu, who wins? Maharaj Ambarish wins. Okay. Something? Yeah.
It's more like Kali Krishna, can you explain?
Go ahead.
Like scriptures are eternal. So even the Vrajavasis would have known that Krishna is God. But we know that they did not see Krishna as the Supreme Lord. his sons, their boy, their friend or something, whatever relationship they had with Krishna. So, because scriptures are eternal, so they would not give mention of Krishna in the Lord. I was just wondering how will it, like Yoga Maya, even though they know they don't know.
That's an interesting question. For one thing, the residents of Braj were not scripturally learned. They were cowards. And another very important thing is that they were moved by the Yogamaya potency. I mean, like, even aside from scriptural understanding, when Mother Jasoda looked inside Krishna's mouth, she could have deduced, aha! Or when Krishna, when Nanda Maharaj witnessed Varuna worshipping Krishna, not just praising him, but worshipping him, you know, he then came back and said, you know, my son is not ordinary, I don't know who he is. But in any case, he's my son, so I have to, you know. The affection was stronger than the exhibiting of his divinity by scripture or any other way, direct observation.
You are saying that you should not worship the demigods, but you should worship Krishna. In fact, a true devotee would want that you worship Krishna. Like in the example of Hanuman and Rama. Like, it is only when we are referring to worship, because we also understand that our true gratitude is to the branch, like in terms of the disciple succession we are talking. We should,
To respect someone as a representative of God is different than approaching the demigod for wanting some benediction, particularly material something. Very different.